the dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. I'm right over here. This is John Barber. You've just heard two very influential voices in my life, Syreeta singing Sunny and Sinatra introducing me in The Tonight Show. It's Monday, May 2nd here in John Barber's World in Las Vegas, where tonight some of my guests will be you, getting amazing astrological readings from our enormously popular star featured guest. She will also be doing those charts for Bernie, Hillary, and the Donald. So the first thing I'm going to do is give you the call-in number. I've only done this once before when she was here months ago, and the response was overwhelming, and it has taken us this long to get her back. So get a pencil and a piece of paper. Here we go. The number in the USA and Canada, toll-free, 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. Well, we're going to wait. And outside the United States, 323-744-4831. Again, 323-744-4831. Now, we've already got a couple of callers, and I'm going to ask them to hold a little bit while I get ready to introduce this amazing, amazing, entertaining, and interesting guest. Now, some of you have asked me to comment on President Obama and his appearance at the press corps dinner over the weekend. Obama's political last summer. But I prefer to leave that up to my cohort, Joe Satilli, in the second half, who is also getting his astrological chart done by our guest. I have, first, a lot of anonymous thank yous to hand out right now, not just to the couple of hundred birthday well-wishers last week, but to many good Samaritans. On Friday night, on Jeff Rentz's show, I told the tale of my day after birthday crisis when I ended up at midnight in an emergency room desperately in need of a catheter from an overly enlarged prostate. Now, I told Jeff I didn't want to tell the story because I said it was old man stuff, but he convinced me to tell it. And I didn't want to tell it because also it was somewhat embarrassing, although amusing, being serviced for a catheter by a female doctor. And if you want to hear that kind of entertaining, awkward tale, you can go to my Facebook page where the link is. But as a result of telling it, though, I heard from a lot of people, including a doctor in Florida and others, suggesting specific medications, none of which I will take, but I offer enormous thanks for their concern. But I heard from a number of younger men who said this is not old man stuff, and it is right, and I'll tell you quickly why. In 1970, I was in my early 30s, and I was hosting the AM show in Los Angeles on ABC, I hired a really bright publicist named Joe Sigmund. He was 32 years of age. He looked like Tyrone Power, dark hair, dark eyes, really handsome. Had a five-year-old son and a very pretty, blonde, Beverly Hills Jewish princess housewife. Anyway, I see him for lunch one day, and he's in absolute total agony. He says when he's leaving me, he's got to go to the doctor. And I said, what's wrong? He said, well, I have these terrible, terrible pains in my lower stomach. And I said, well, what kind of doctor are you going to? He said, a urologist. I said, what's a urologist? So he explained to me that the urologist would explain to him why he could not go to the bathroom. I couldn't urinate. And I said, what's the problem? He said, well, evidently I have an enlarged prostate. So I said, well, what's a prostate? I mean, that's how uninformed I was. Anyway, he went to the doctor. So I told him to call me right away because I was very concerned about him because he was a dear friend and a terrific publicist, loved by everybody in the business. So anyway, he calls me and he tells me that the doctor had told him that he was not getting enough sex. And I said, what? What has that got to do with a swollen prostate? He said, John, evidently it's very important because that's part of one of the most important parts of the reproductive system. So, and if it's swollen, you have a problem because your urethra is blocked, so you cannot urinate. I said, Joe, I don't want to hear about this. You just go about your life. Anyway, a week later, he calls me on the phone, and he's laughing. And I said, oh, my God, Joe, you sound terrific. I'm so glad everything is okay. He said, John, it's not okay. I said, if it's not okay, Joe, why are you laughing? He said, my wife got furious, and she called the doctor, and she was screaming at him. I said, screaming what? She said, how dare you tell my husband that he had to have more sex? So Joe started giggling again. I said, well, what's so funny? And Joe said, well, the doctor said, Mrs. Sigmund, I didn't say it had to be with you.
Oh, my.
So 2 weeks later, I saw him again. He now had a goyish brunette girlfriend, and a month after that, got a divorce. And so I guess for Joe, his first marriage wasn't destined to be successful according to his stars. So now we'll get to your stars. In Julius Caesar, Cassius says to Brutus, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. We are underlings. Now, Cassius may not have believed it, but a lot of world leaders, from Ronald Reagan to Adolf Hitler, most certainly did believe in astrology. Now, I don't know that I believe this stuff, but my amazing guest has been right on more often than not of all who practice this ancient art. She is by far the most enormously talented at this. She's also talented in other areas, a gifted singer who traveled extensively in Brazil, singing in Spanish, French, and English. She designs the most entertaining, interesting cards that you'll love, called Destiny Cards, and is a much sought after astrologer. And it is a delight after all these months to have her back again. Rosie Cutter. Rosie, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry that you weren't feeling good, but I think there are some simple, inexpensive things I could direct you to, because like we talked about before, everything in life and the body is either heating or cooling. And heating is acidic, and it's inflammation. And there are ways from Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine to cool the body internally, and that can solve many problems.
Well, thank you so much, dear.
You're just on fire.
Listen, I have gotten so much advice. It's just astonishing, just from a little radio show. But first of all, Rosie, I can understand somebody wanting to be a singer, okay? Or some understanding wanting to be a musician. Why would anyone want to be an astrologer? How old were you when you first became interested in this, and why?
Well, if you are a musician or working in any of the entertainment industries, you could appreciate how valuable it would be to have a roadmap of a person's tendencies, because you tend to deal with a lot of characters. So it's useful. I was interested in palm reading and numerology when I was a teenager. And then when I lived in Kauai, the northernmost Hawaiian island, from 20 to 26, that's when I was exposed to the destiny cards, after already knowing quite a bit about astrology and studying. And so when I came across the system, it was the most accurate I'd ever seen. You don't even need the time of birth. It's based on the day. It predates the tarot. And as I started to read just one simple page from the Love Cards book by Robert Camp, it just perfectly described my life. And I was desperate to know about my roommates and friends. And it just has unfolded from there.
Well, can I tell you something astonishing that I read from one of America's greatest brain surgeons? He said that in the fetus, the hands are formed off of the brain. And he said, so it is entirely possible that some of what is in the brain is transmitted and translated to the hands. And so I would not be surprised if some palmistry, some palm readers are not accurate in their readings. Now, that is scientific, and I can sort of understand that, but I cannot understand how you could believe that Mars or Venus or the Sun or Jupiter or these planets that are millions of miles away could have any influence on us, well, even though the moon does influence the water in our bodies.
Yes. So if we look at just what we can see with our own senses, we've done many studies in this world, in the last 50 years even, on the effects of the full moon on everyone, not just women. It makes all people's bodies and brains swell. When the brain is swollen, that is can be an indicator of mental illness. It can be an indicator of high stress. Once again, it's excess heat and inflammation in the brain. So if you think about that, the moon, yes, affects the water, affects the tides, and affects our body. The planetary body that they call Mars, now that might be a lot farther away, but you know what? That's a lot bigger too. And it does have an effect according to wonderful ancient religions like Ayurvedic and the Vedic astrology. Mars and where it's placed when you're born would have an effect on the heat element of your body and your liver. So, John, if you went to India today or lots of Asia and you went to a doctor, they would want to know your birthday because originally all palm reading and all iridology was all medical diagnosis. So they can see certain elements in the body, just like the foods that are grown in the winter, like things that are very dense, like artichoke and asparagus, have a different energy because of the time of the year they're born. People who are born in different times manifest a different type of energy in their bodies. You can even see it in Ayurvedic. It's called the doshas. So you're very airy. You're a vata dosha. And that is also influenced in your destiny card, which is the sexy nine of clubs, which is all about knowledge. So it is, in a way, I know it seems hard to believe, but for me, every chart that I do reinforces a belief in a greater power. And it's much like sacred geometry and the flowers that you see unfold before you perfectly.
Well, speaking of charts here, I had promised that people would get the charts of Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump. So which one would you like to start with?
Well, let's start with Bernie, because interestingly enough, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, though they have different birthdays, they are the same exact cards. So Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are both a three of diamonds, and their second card is the ace of spades, very driven. So it's very interesting to see how they're at the exact opposite ends of the spectrum. Donald Trump has
excuse me a second, Rosie. Are you reading from your destiny cards or you're doing their astrological charts or is it a combination?
It's a combination because their astrological chart is what makes their destiny card. So Bernie Sanders is born on September 8th, 1941. The destiny card of that day, even if a country was founded on that day, would be a three of diamonds. Everyone born on September 8th is a three of diamonds. Now, Donald Trump, even though he's born June 14th, that happens to be the same day as the three of diamonds. So I just think it's very interesting how opposite ends of the spectrum they are as people.
Well, it's also interesting because they're both considered outsiders.
Yes, and they are. Their astrology, many famous people are Three of Diamonds, many movers and shakers in the entertainment world, probably some people that you know, James Woods, William Hurt, Matthew McConaughey, Deborah Winger, Drew Barrymore, Bill Cosby, John Belushi, Ted Kennedy, all the same Three of Diamonds card, dynamic people. But it's funny too, because they always make these comments about how Bernie is so great because he's been so poor all his life, you know, whereas Donald is so bad because he's focused too much on money. But those would be the two extremes of the card, either somebody who's really creative and prolific around money and tries a million things, or somebody who never makes any advances because they worry too much about money.
What do you say? What do the stars and what do the cards say about their destinies in November?
Well, I have a feeling, unfortunately, for many of my friends and supporters, I don't know if the way that the system works now, Bernie Sanders will get in, even though he has overwhelming support from a lot of people my age and younger as well. Donald Trump looks like he's in a strong place right after his birthday is coming up. But I also have a disturbing sense that something, some shenanigans could happen where he could maybe win the nomination and then they don't give it to him. So for both of them, it's a little tricky, but I would put my money on Donald before Bernie. And aside from astrological reasons, also just because when the election happens in November, there's going to be something that happens that shocks society and people are going to be really upset. So I don't think that Bernie would get in. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. What you're saying is that it may be Hillary. So tell us what the stars and the cards have in store for Hillary.
So Hillary Clinton is a nine of hearts. And interestingly enough, so is Ted Cruz. And in my humble opinion, they both are very similar in that way, because the nine of hearts is the giver of love, but they have a tendency to be.
Hold it. You cannot tell me that Hillary Clinton is a giver of love. Otherwise, Bill wouldn't have been looking around at Monica.
Well, let me just say that everything is on its high side and its low side, but nine being an incredibly spiritual number, these people have a very fine line or tightrope to walk. So they are definitely neither of them on the high side. Now, what would the low side be of the nine of hearts? A victim, very unlikable, very whiny, in a certain sense, someone who's getting punished in life because they've abused their power in a past life. And what is Hillary Clinton sold to us as? The archetype of the scorned woman. He cheats on her, da 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 da, but she's not strong enough to leave, which I don't think is actually the true narrative. I think that she probably prefers the company of others, but it is an archetype of this scorned person and this sad woman. And unfortunately, I think that there's enough disenfranchised women in this country that might just vote for her because they identify with the victim mentality so much.
What is astonishing to me, Rosie, honest to gosh, is I know that there are some people who are supporting Hillary Clinton. We had that terrific lady lawyer in Los Angeles on our show a month or so. Gloria Allred is a strong supporter of hers. I have never met anyone, though, who likes her. People genuinely like Bernie. And there are some people who like Donald. If they don't like Donald, at least they like the fact that he's standing up to the establishment and revealing how corrupt the system is. So now, what did the cards say and the stars say for Hillary in November?
So she, when we talked last on your last show, was before the whole scandal had broken out around the emails and stuff. And so for the last few months, she had been in a very difficult place. She is 68 years old right now, and she had all before her birthday in the fall and Christmas was all Jack of Spades, which we talked about her getting in trouble for some things that she had done in her past. But what her stars say is that up until her next birthday in October, she is making a lot of changes in the way that she appeals to people. And then the elections would be right after her birthday when she turned 69. And she's in a bit of a stronger place, unfortunately, I would say. I would say that it's either going to be her or Donald, but people will be very angry. Because even if it's Donald, all the Bernie people are going to be outraged because it's already been shown to be not kosher the way they're dealing with
it. And then aside from that, to get back to what you said, that there's going to be some kind of major disaster or calamity that is not natural that will occur in November. Okay. Thank you for that. And are you ready to take some calls from some folks who are calling from all over to get their charts read?
I'm just so ready. Yep.
Tell us where you are. Say hello to Rosie and then give her your birth date and the place of birth and, if you can, the time.
Hi, Rosie. How are you?
Hi. Great. How are you?
I'm a little chilly. I just stepped outside so my three-year-old doesn't interrupt us here.
Yeah.
I'm calling from Toronto.
Okay. What's your birthday?
So, it's birthday. My birthday is May 2nd. Today is my birthday.
Oh, how
my goodness.
Wonderful.
Happy birthday, Carrie.
Happy birthday. So actually today you get a whole new set of cards for the year. So how young did you turn today?
34.
Wonderful.
I can't even believe I'm saying. So I was born in 82 and I was born in a little town called Renfrew, Ontario, Canada.
Okay. So first of all, May 2nd, you're right there in Taurus, and your destiny card is a Four of Spades, which is the card of satisfaction through work. And so you are a very strong person that's here to work, but you need to do the work you love, you see? Because in the low side, sometimes you can get stuck in a rut, you're very stubborn, you have a very good health, but it's best that you care for your health by natural methods. And anytime that any sort of health issues come up, you just need to get moving, like planting a garden or going for a walk. So what question do you have about right now? If you have a question for like the next year of 34, what are you wondering about?
I've had since my son was born, I mean, being a mom becomes your life is never the same after that, nor do you sleep as much either. But, I've had a tremendous amount of stress, and you've almost hit the nail right on the head when you said all the things you just said. I am a worker, and I have to feel a sense of accomplishment of completing something or working towards something. Or I wouldn't appreciate, I certainly do, but it's just a different kind of appreciation. You feel humble, gratitude and very humble when you've accomplished something through hard work. But I've had a tremendous amount of setbacks, one being family court with my son's father, and it's kind of sort of dragging on, and I'd like to know when that's going to sort of finalize. And when I can get to the next level to start, building back up again, because I've had some setbacks.
Carrie, could I ask you a couple of quick questions before Rosie answers? First of all, the business of family court, is it just a simple divorce, or is there some kind of abuse involved, or is there some kind of financial shenanigans involved?
Well, all of the above. I was never formally married, although I was with my son's father for 7 years, and he hasn't paid support for about 2 years now. And he's very well off. He's been very successful financially, and there's no excuses. You know, there's many people in the world who are going through difficult times. They've lost jobs, and they've moved around, or they've lost their homes, or whatever the case may be, and that's not the case for him, and it's really just about sort of punishing me in a way. So that was one, and it was an abusive relationship at one time, and I guess it's sort of, he's essentially bullying me through the legal way by trying to delay every which way and not pay anything. So it takes quite a lot out of you whenever you going through this kind of stuff, and it seems to be sort of never ending.
If it is settled in your favor, Carrie, will you make a lot of money or just a little money? How will this turn out for you? And when do you expect it to be resolved?
Well, I'm hoping to have it resolved by the end of this month. I wanted it resolved by the end of last month. I was in court 5 times in the month of April alone. And I'm just trying to enforce the final order that was given from 2 years ago. So,
Rosie, what do you see for Carrie in the next month?
Okay, I can see that 33 was really intense. Definitely, you moved. You ended up in a totally different location in your life. Everything changed. What I would say is, when is it going to change? It changed today at 34, when you turned 34 years old. You have set before yourself a goal to radically change your life. And you know, when it might not be as fast as you want right now, but the major shift is going to happen for you in October, where you're going to move to a better place. You're going to meet somebody else if you haven't already. But these next few months, even if things don't work out the way you think they're going to, because I can see how it's like small problems and it's frustrating, really, life has its own timing, and it is wasting your time, but it will be resolved and it will be okay, but it just might not be as fast as you think. And you will have another business partnership or business opportunity that comes into your life before your next birthday that can make you a lot of money. And this is a much more emotionally stable year. You could have been married to Brad Pitt at 33 and you would have not been happy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so right now it's okay. Even if it's like, oh my gosh, it's not working as fast as I thought, there's going to be a lot more resolve in your life by the time August comes. And then by the time October comes, you could get a new job, move to a better house, and you definitely have some good love in your future. But in your life in general, I would recommend running your own business, because you have a very good karma with money and you should be the boss, and you could do something from home or do something that gives you flexibility, and you might be able to come up with what that is this year. So anytime you feel like thinking about something that makes you angry or worried and stressed, redirect that to something creative or something that makes you feel good, because you have to listen to the story of your mind every day, you know? And we can easily spend a lot of time dwelling and stuff and feeding the negativity. So just let it happen. It's going to happen as it is. You can't change them as a person, but it's going to be fine for you. And you're going to move on from this whole movie.
Carrie, what kind of work did you used to do or do you do?
I spent 12 years on a construction site operating heavy equipment. I was 10 years in a union, and then in 2009, I actually started a small company, excavation company of my own. And even though I've used the word small, it's much smaller than that. It was just me and a machine, but I worked for myself, and that's sort of, I have an entrepreneurial mind, and she hit the nail right on the head there, too, and that's sort of how I see myself. And when I say boss, I mean that humbly. I'm the kind of person where, although I've had a lot of chaos in my life, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, as they say, and I can kind of grab the reins and I'll jump in front of somebody to shield them from harm. And sort of, I think that's what bosses do, or leaders are supposed to do, is run the show and make sure they protect their people, and that's sort of my mindset. And so, you know, certainly wasn't on my radar to become a construction worker, but it sort of ended up that way at 18 years old out of high school. I wanted to go to law school, but that certainly wasn't in the cards. But I spent 12 years on a construction site.
Where is your husband now, ex-husband?
Do you really want me to say that?
Well, yes,
not that I should be laughing about it. It's no laughing matter, but he's sitting in a jail cell right now.
Oh, my God.
It's okay. That's why it's so hard for you to deal with the courts.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be okay.
It's certainly not funny, but it's just the question here. I think you kind of knew the answer. We've spoken before, so I guess you wanted me to say that
listen,
loud. But
thank you, Carrie, so much for calling. I appreciate it. And
well,
I
was surprised. I got all this information, valuable information.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for calling. And Rosie, thank you for doing that for Carrie. Rosie, it seemed, the more Carrie talked, the more the disaster of her life seemed to unfold. Do people come to you for readings? Primarily, are they disturbed or troubled or in trouble? Do any people come to you because all of a sudden they have won the lottery and they want to see what's in their cards for the future and thank you?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. And that's, J.P. Morgan said in like 1907, millionaires don't use astrology, billionaires do. All business decisions are based on timing. So I do have some good news. I have good news where I get to pick babies' birthdays, for example, or somebody meets somebody new and they're interested. But for the most part, yeah, people get to the point where they're looking for outside advice because they're just confounded a lot of times by the actions of other people, getting screwed over by their family or friends in business deals. And the astrology can offer a lot of solace. If I can look at her chart and see that 33 was one of the more intense years of her life and let her know that, regardless of who she was as a person, for anybody of that astrology, it would have happened. So she's doing a great job just getting through it. It can provide a solace and a timing. But yeah, it's a lot of times, and it's not a disaster, you know, because everything is trial and error, so we can learn what doesn't work. But with astrology,
and of course, regardless of what happens to you in your life, whether it's an earthquake, whether it's being fired, whatever happens to you, the way you respond is a choice.
That's
so you
true.
Can always make a choice. So if you make a bad choice, it's your fault. It's not the star's fault. Now, I had asked, you will hear, if you've not heard, Joe Satilli, who is by far the brightest journalist I know in the country, and that's the reason he's my cohort on this show. And right after the break, you will hear him. He publishes the most brilliant newsletter called News Vandal. You should get it, Rosie. I will send you a copy of it after the show. You can open it up. You can read 20 or 25 headlines of the best stories, the most interesting and most important stories in the world, and decide which ones you want to read. Now, I don't know that he believes in any of this stuff either, but I asked you to do a chart on him. So before he comes up, he'll be up after the break. Could you tell me a little bit about Joe Satilli, the day he was born, where he was born, the time he was born, and what the cards and what the stars have in store for Joe?
Well, first of all, of course you love him, and of course he's creative and talented. He's a jack of diamonds, so he's the salesperson's card. So all jacks are sons of the king. They have access to the king, but they also can translate it to all the people. The jack is the intermediary, and so everyone loves a jack, and he can come up with creative ways. He could sell ice to an Eskimo, this kind of a thing. And because he's gifted in this way, it's much like being a politician. His very best life is of service. And he has a certain amount of mastery around money, values, and so he's here to help other people and be a role model. And so, you know, you love him, of course. You have a good karma with him. And he's very creative and original. And he can be successful in whatever he wants to do in his life. The only time that it's naughty is when it's the immature jack. And sometimes they can, you know, pull one over on you. Or they can be practical jokers and things like that. But yeah, it's a really wonderful person to work with on a creative level.
If somebody were to have some kind of physical ailment who is a jack, what would it be?
Well, I would say it would be overuse things or inflammation, because they can tend to run it so hard, be so dedicated to work and family, that like all of the expansive cards, if he doesn't take extra care, it's like running a Ferrari. You know, he needs better food. When he breaks down, it costs more money because he's running at such a high speed, high level. So I would say it would have to do something with like arthritis, inflammation, or digestion, because those are all things of excess heat in the body.
Well, Rosie, I want to thank you so much once again for being here. Tell us where people can contact you to get readings, where they can contact you to get these delicious destiny cards that you have. Please.
Oh, great. Okay, wonderful. So it's Rosie Cutter on Facebook, RosieCutter. And my email is roselyncutter, roselyncutter@gmail.com. They can Facebook me, they can email me, or they can call me or text me at 605-831-9076. And I offer comprehensive readings. We can look into the past, into the future, into friends and family's cards, and they're all recorded, and it's a wonderful time.
Well, Rosie, again, thank you so very much. You know, and I must tell you, I'm astonished that BBS hasn't come to you and asked you to do a radio show.
They did.
Oh, well, then you should be doing it. You should be doing it because you're wonderful. Anyway, again, thank you so very much, folks. We will be right back with the Jack of Diamonds, Joe Satilli.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, this is John Barber of John Barber's World every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. I'm telling you about a terrific show, The New Criminal Minds, with outstanding actor Gary Sinise, called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, a tough drama about a special unit of the FBI involved in protecting Americans who are beyond borders. It follows the regular Criminal Minds, airing every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Don't miss it. Gary Sinise is outstanding.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber, he put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back. This is John Barber on John Barber's World. We just had the most interesting conversation with Rosie Cutter. And I must apologize to the numerous people who called and could not get through. And part of it was a technical glitch here, because evidently there are two boards which I can read. Callers call in on one board, and I know that they're there, but I was looking at the other board and didn't. And so for those of you who called in, didn't get to talk to Rosie, my apologies. Please, you can contact her. This show will be archived, so you can go to the show. You can hear where Rosie is. You can contact her. She'll be delighted to talk to you. I am now going to welcome back our Jack of Diamonds, Joe Satilli. Joe, I'm so delighted that you're here.
The Jack in the Box, more like it.
That is funny. But she did do a terrific chart on you, and I sent it to you this afternoon, and you said she was right on with that.
Well, I mean, with some things, actually, what she said over the air hit a lot more closer to home than actually the chart itself that you sent me. You know, it's – what do we know, John? I mean, ultimately, you know, the universe is an interesting place, and there are a lot of forces. We don't even understand – dark matter. There are so many parts of the universe we don't get. Gravity has not been fully explained.
What is it that you would like to cover right now with the news, Vandal? Because you have no.
Okay. Well,
hold it a second, Doug. I'm talking to Joe, and I can't take calls for people who want the readings now. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Oh. Then let them through. Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, who is this? Identify yourself. This is John. And where are you calling from?
This is Dippy. I called in, and I was going to talk to you guys. I talked to you last time. I'm calling from Shanghai.
Are you kidding?
Nope, no joke.
Oh, my goodness. What time is it over there?
Well, it's 8:44 in the morning where I am in Shanghai.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, what is it you would like to talk about? Because Joe can talk about anything, believe me.
All right, well, perfect. Last time I called in, we spoke about, I got into a little bit of some, I was working scamming Chinese people on the internet, and we spoke a little bit about my trade. You told me a story about your friend in Las Vegas trying to scam a Chinese man, and kind of bonded about that.
Oh, my goodness, what a memory you have.
Yeah, you know, I'm sharp as a tack, John, and I actually wanted to talk to you.
Or at least as sharp as a chopstick.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one, Joe. You're killing it. Listen, John, I was going to ask you for advice, but if your friend Joe wants to chime in, that'd be fantastic as well.
Go ahead.
You know,
go
sometimes,
ahead. Ask for advice.
Sometimes you want to hear from a sidekick, but, you know, the good old wisdom of John Barber, you can't really beat it as far as I'm concerned. So basically what happened was I had a bit of a rough patch. I spent my 27th birthday in a Chinese prison, sleeping on the cold, hard floors with 30 to 45 other prisoners at times. And basically I got in a little bit of some trouble. I was trafficking bear parts, you know, mainly paws and hides and you know, when I'm lucky, a gallbladder or something. But I just wanted to get your take on this. Couple of worldly men. How do I get back home without a passport?
You can't get back home without
a
passport.
See, the thing is, you're in Shanghai, so it's really hard to Shanghai somebody who's in Shanghai.
Right, exactly. I'm from Shanghai. It literally,
Joe,
you know,
that was no
Shanghai.
Solace.
I think, you know, one thing that maybe, I mean, are you in the oil business at all? Can you get into the oil business?
Not that I know of. You know,
because the South China Sea, it's all oil business, and if you can hook up with an oil company, I guarantee you they can make anything happen. They can get you in and out of any country in the world if you're doing it. If you're in the oil business,
what if you become a merchant seaman, Joe? Couldn't he do that?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm currently wanted by the law, and I don't have any kind of legal identification right now. So it's hard for me to find legitimate means of travel. Maybe I could hop on a boat or something like that.
Well, tell me something. How on earth do I get a fan in Shanghai who has no identity?
Well, I'm from the United States, and I'm only over here for business. I was selling, you know, different parts of a bear, you know, mainly the paw. And I accidentally kind of crossed the wrong group, and now,
you know,
I'm kind of
I have a very
out.
Funny feeling, Joe, that we are being put on from
yeah.
somebody who is calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. I do not believe
this is me. I am. You remember me. I'm Dippy from Las Vegas. I called in last time Rosie was on the show, and, you know, take a couple of round turns, and I'm in Shanghai.
Well, listen.
I can't bear it anymore. Your story gives me pause.
So, anyway, let's hang him up right now, Joe, and get... Thank you
All
so
right,
much.
All right, well, I guess... Hey, one second, guys. Somebody's banging on the wall. One game! Take my wall!
I'm telling you, Joe, that is not a call from somebody.
No, it's wonderful, though. I mean, you know, it's... You'd like to have a crooked guy to be your straight man every time.
Yeah, that was a great, great put on. Anyway, let's see if we can get to the business of your news, Vandal. What story is moving you the most?
Well, today it's Iraq today, John, and it's the Green Zone. And, you know, today the first story I had was by the great Robin Wright in New Yorker, a story called How the Curse of Sykes-Picot Still Haunts the Middle East. That's the top story. If you're not familiar, Sir Mark Sykes and François-Georges Picot, they are the two diplomats, one British and one French, who were tasked with redrawing the map of the Middle East in the aftermath of the Ottoman Empire and as World War I came to a conclusion, and they created the mess, in a sense, or set in stone what became the perpetual mess that has been a perpetual business opportunity for Western governments who can utilize internal strife and the elevation of a strongman to dominate sectarian divides to their benefit, particularly in an oil-rich region. And it is now being hashed out on a daily basis inside the Middle East, and particularly inside Iraq. And Iraq is the one that gets me, John, and I'm going to have a hard time not tearing up here, because the United States destroyed an entire country, a bystander nation, under false pretenses.
Joe, the United States did not destroy it. George Bush and Dick Cheney destroyed it. Because when you say the United States, you're including me and Cindy Shee and a lot of millions of others who were opposed to this. It was not the United States. It was the United States government, and they do not represent the people.
Well, I understand that point, and I am willing to accede that point. I say the United States because I think one of the reasons why you feel the way you do and why Cindy Sheehan did what she did, and one of the things that motivates me to continue to do what I do, is because ultimately in a – whether it's a semi-democracy or a faux democracy, they did do it in the name of the United States. And one of the reasons why they hate us, you know, that perennial question, it's not because of our freedom. It's not because there are 13 different types of frozen pizza in the frozen food aisle. It's because of real things that were done. And there's some numbers. The great antiwar.com, there's a woman there named Margaret Griffiths, and she's been doing this for years. And she basically spends every month charting all of the casualties in Iraq, tabulating them, and posting them. And today was the posting day. So far, here's April's numbers. 4,609 people died in April in Iraq. 4,609. That's 1,000 more. That's actually 1,600 more than died in 9/11. Let me give you some other numbers. Here are the number of coalition strikes so far. 12,014 coalition strikes, 8,163 airstrikes in Iraq.
When you say coalition, who is part of that coalition outside of
Well, you know, coalition would be the United States and, you know, Britain, occasionally Canada, but it's really it's all the United States by and large. It's 95% of is that. You have 3,851 strikes in Syria. You have 41,697 bombs and missiles. 41,000. And how about this? There's a great website called Cost of War. It's run by some scholars at Brown University. And we don't know the actual numbers. Lancet came out with some numbers back in circa 2008, I think it was, saying close to 1 million people totally have died if you go with all the collateral damage. Remember, one of the first things that George W. Bush's administration did when they started the shock and awe campaign in Iraq is to order all Iraqi doctors and hospital staff to not count casualties. They were directed to not count casualties. So we don't have a totally accurate count, but this is what they have. So far, over 370,000 people have died due to direct war violence and many more indirectly in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Keep in mind, the United States has been at war in Pakistan ever since. 210,000 civilians, 7.6 million war refugees and displaced persons. 7.6 million people have become refugees or internally displaced people as a result of the war. An overall price tag of $4.4 trillion. But I don't want to get into the 7.6 million. You know, is it because the Iraqis got to get it together? You know, they have to come up with a government. They've got to step it up. That's what Joe Biden says, and that's what Obama says, and that's what Republicans say and Democrats.
Could I ask you one quick question before you get to that? What, because this is information that I can only get from you, and I can only get from a small internet show, and you get from this wonderful woman who dedicates her life to cataloging these disasters, okay? What do you think would happen if Bernie Sanders stood in front of CNN cameras at a debate with this page in his hand and just read these statistics to the American people, do you think he would not become the next president of the United States?
Well, it's an interesting question because we talked about this regarding Donald Trump, and I think that the moment that Donald Trump really got traction is when he was on the stage with Jeb Bush and he said the Iraq war was a disaster over and over again, and Donald Trump is still the only major political figure in American history, and I know it's a short history because the Iraq war was, you know, only a decade and a half ago, but or just over a decade ago. But he's still the only major politician to actually decry the pain and suffering and death suffered by the Iraqi people. Normally when you hear about Iraq as a mistake, it's about we've lost thousands of American lives and the blood and treasure of America. Nobody ever talks about what happened to the Iraqis who died and had the country destroyed.
That's true. Not even Bernie says that.
Not even Bernie. Not even Bernie. So I think there is a possibility that Bernie would have gotten traction had he done this. I think it's obviously too late now.
It may not be, because it seems to me that he is outpolling Hillary in California.
Yeah, but mathematically, I've looked at the numbers. The number of delegates he has to win, I think it's now like over 68% in each of the next the coming contests, and it's just a number that I don't think he's going to get to. And I know he's taking a new tack. He's trying to pick up on Donald Trump's system is rigged idea, which he launched yesterday in a press conference, and he reiterated again today. I think the Democratic Party is just too controlled. That's what the superdelegates are about, is to make sure that Bernie Sanders and people like him and guys like Howard Dean don't get nominated. Because remember, Howard Dean in 2004, when he was displaced after the infamous scream, when he was trying to rile up his supporters, and he said, Yahoo! And everybody said, oh, look at it, shows he's a maniac. Well, the problem was at that time in 2004, he was willing to say that George W. Bush lied to get us into Iraq, and that was not going to happen.
You want to know something offhand about the Howard Dean scream? I was one of the early – I was really interested in Howard Dean early on in his campaign. And then the scream occurred, and then the press took after him. Well, having written for a great number of politicians and some really important celebrities, I sat down and I wrote a detailed two-page letter on how he could turn that scream into something enormously positive.
Mm.
And I sent it twice, and I called his campaign manager. They never would take my call. They never responded. And I didn't just fall off a turnip truck, you know. I had created the most important, the most popular reality show in American history, for crying out loud. And I'm the only one who won 5 Emmys in entertainment and news, and I sent them all the documentation. They never called back.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because he needed something. The tabulation at the time, I believe the number was, the scream was played 259 times in 12 hours.
Yes, exactly.
And he could not overcome that. And I think your advice would have been great. Unfortunately, I kind of know how these campaigns run. I had the happenstance through an emotional relationship to meet him from somebody who was working for him, and it's. You know, these campaigns are so walled off and so heavily guarded, and I think really once that scream happened, it was all over and John Kerry's way was paved. And we kind of have an idea of where John Kerry is now based on in spite of, you know, his opposition to the Vietnam War after coming back, and actually in spite of incredibly good work he tried to do on drug dealing by the CIA in the Iran-Contra affair. He was the only senator to push on that. But you see, sometimes you wonder if these people learn after pushing hard that it's easier to go along if you want to get along.
But why does he need it? He's married to a woman that owns Heinz Ketchup.
Well, that's right. And they've got they actually have overseas accounts a la Mossack Fonseca. So, you know.
That's right. The Panama Papers. But, you know, I was, again, an early supporter of John Kerry. I was in the news at the time, and he was always testifying before Congress, and he turned his medals in. But subsequently, I began to wonder, you know, there were very, very articulate young men who weren't from the 1% establishment,
right,
who were every bit as brave as John Kerry was, probably more articulate than John Kerry. But somehow, somebody from the 1% got to be the spokesperson mm-hmm. for the anti-war movement. And I would not be surprised if that were programmed by the establishment and John Kerry in light of the kind of dreadful things he has done, in spite of what you say about the little sippage here about the CIA, is that he has become like the male Hillary Clinton, for Christ's sake.
Well, I'm, you know, I hear you on that. I'm going to say that John Kerry is not nearly as belligerent as Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is a neoconservative. And
I thought you were going to say neo-Nazi.
You know, I'm a scholar of on the topic of fascism. I'm careful about throwing around the Nazi thing. But, Hillary Clinton is so belligerent, and Hillary Clinton is so completely on board with the Kagans. And she did manage from afar the overthrow of the Ukrainian government, and she did weaponize the State Department, and she did open up the State Department's facilities around the world to special operation forces, and did turn the State Department into basically a de facto salesperson for U.S. special ops training, and which would then, of course, lead to the purchase of U.S. military equipment to arm those soldiers that the special operators are training, thanks to the good work of the State Department, because the State Department has now become a part of this whole of government weapons.
And Joe, what else she did? She said it during a debate that she would continue doing it.
Right.
And got applause for it from the audience. And I don't think that if Bernie takes the same approach as Donald Trump, he stands a chance. He stands a chance on two things: telling us the kind of horrible truths about what our government is doing to the Middle East in the terms of the human carnage, and then yes, also the cost to us. And look what is happening to – and you're aware of depleted uranium, for crying out loud. Look what is happening to our veterans in this country alone. If he points that out, he stands a chance. If he picks Liz Warren right now as his running mate, he stands a chance. Other than that, unless he overwhelms in California, he has no chance. And if he has no chance, we have no chance.
Well, you know, I'm starting to move in the other direction. You know, I kind of change back and forth. I still think, in spite of everything that happened, it's really going to be Donald Trump on women versus Hillary on trade. That's, I think, going to be a big showdown in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan. And I think Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan will all be in play for Trump. And if he can take those three states, he's actually got a shot to win, all of his kooky statements notwithstanding. And again, this is going to be the rub. He has some things that he has said regarding women, and this is not about playing the women's card. These are his own words. He's got a giant pile of manure that he has spewed forth in front of his candidacy that he is going to have to climb over to be able to win, but it is not an insurmountable climb because
in that pile of manure underneath somewhere there's a pony. Okay?
Yeah.
And Donald Trump, I have to tell you, and you're well aware of this, he is the only one who has said during the debates, he is the only one capable of negotiating a peace treaty between Israel and Palestine, for which he was booed, okay?
Right.
But what it comes down to is that Hillary Clinton is the evil you do know. Donald Trump is the evil you don't know.
Right.
But what he has said in his ability to possibly negotiate in the Middle East And as you pointed out, he is the only one who keeps saying it was a mistake then, and it's a mistake now, and it'll be a mistake in the future to be getting involved in the Middle East.
Well, and his other message, which is America first, which the foreign policy establishment went basically, I'm just going to say, apeshit over when he said it last week, because they are now saying, well, that's basically sort of fascist code, that's Nazi code, because if you remember right before, you know, all the arguments about getting into World War II, there was this America First movement. Let's not get back involved in another war in Europe. We've already gone through World War I. People forget about what a seismic impact World War I had on the populations. I mean, just read Hemingway, right?
Yes,
I mean, this Hemingway wrote about it more than once. And so, but Lindbergh got behind it, and because Lindbergh is established as a Nazi sympathizer, it's now assumed that if you say America first, you're secretly a Nazi. I do not think that that's why Trump is saying it. I think Trump is saying it for a very basic and banal reason. It's that Americans are sick of sending their wives and sons and daughters and husbands and uncles and overseas.
Not entirely, because there is no draft, and that's how smart the establishment is.
Well, true.
I mean, they have dumbed down this country. Clinton eliminated the job, so I know three kids, bright kids, 21 honor graduate students have to go into the military because there's no job, not even McDonald's or Burger King for
boy is right now.
Okay.
My boy is on an aircraft carrier in the South China Sea right now because he was working his butt off at Barnes & Noble. And a proposition that was probably going to close anyway because that business is in decline, and going to school. And he thought, why should I do that when I'm going to get nowhere?
It must break your heart. I know.
No, it actually doesn't, because, you know, ultimately, I do think that the people who end up serving in the military are probably, by and large, the most educated and worldly of the Americans that we have. Because many of them have actually seen it. And if you think about the staggering cost of PTSD and the staggering numbers of suicides, I think it's because the people who come back actually had a conscience when they went in. And when they came back,
they're shooting the wrong people. And
there's no doubt about that.
Your boy is in harm's way. And some of the most interesting men that I talk to are now 50 years of age who were in the military, and they retired because they realized they had made a mistake because their country made a mistake. It's like Smedley Butler. Now, these guys thought they were going over there and fighting for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They were fighting for Halliburton. They were fighting for Goldman Sachs. And it's getting worse. You know, Garrison said in 1969 when he lost the Clay Shroff trial, he said, fascism will come to America in the guise of patriotism. And, you know, you talk about people being worried about fascism. It is already here. It's what Chris Hedges calls corporatism. It is exactly the same thing. Under Mussolini, it was the state joining with corporations to run their country. This country is run by corporations. And their bully boys are the CIA, and their bully boys are the United States government. We are living in the belly of the evil empire that Ronald Reagan once called the Soviet Union.
Well, I'll give you one more. I'll go one up on you, and that's what's fascinating to me, because I was an evangelical in the 70s. Remember the late great Planet Earth of Hal Lindsey and – there was that huge thing in the 70s where charismatic evangelicalism had this massive upsurge, and Jimmy Carter was actually a part of that, by the way.
Yes,
and I was rebaptized in front of a congregation of 500 people when I was 9 years old. And they said, Joey, do you accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your personal savior? And I said, I do. And they dunked me, and I went to I went to church more than one time a week. Believe me, I went often. I was actually enrolled in school where they give you, they paddled you for not doing your Bible verses. And they believe that we are heading into the end times. And they're looking for the new whore of Babylon.
But they want the end times.
Well, but yeah, there's that. But the irony is that they look, they say it's in Brussels, or the whore of Babylon is somewhere in Rome, or it's somewhere in the Middle East. No, I think if you actually read Revelations, you'll find that the whore of Babylon that's described there most generally fits with Washington, D.C., which is why my first blog I ever wrote when I was in D.C., secretly writing it while I was working in the mainstream media, was called Dry Humping the Whore of Babylon, because dry humping is all the whore would ever let me do.
Well, that's probably why you are so smart now, because your mind opened up and you have just absorbed everything that you could. And by the way, do you know where the Garden of Eden actually was?
Well, it was in Iraq.
The Garden of Eden, the Bible says that we were all descended from one man and one woman, Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve only had two boys, Cain and Abel. Now, if we are descended from that foursome, we are all descendants of incest. If that is true, then the Garden of Eden was in the Ozarks.
Wow.
So on that note,
I bow down.
On that note, I will say to you that an atheist has as much proof that God does not exist as believers have that God does exist. And that is absolutely and totally what the Mexicans would say is nada.
Yeah, amen, brother.
There you go. Okay, now, Joe, oh, my gosh, thank God you're on the show. Thank God you're my friend.
We have fun, John.
Anyway, tell folks now where they can listen to you for the rest of the week and where they can get your News Vandal. And by the way, I like the fact that at the bottom of the News Vandal, you've added all that stuff about where they can donate.
No, that's coming. It's coming. I'm launching a donation page on Patreon in about 2 weeks, and that's coming. Finally, after all these years, I've been doing it for 5 years unpaid. You can just go to newsvandal.com, N-E-W-S-V-A-N-D-A-L, newsvandal.com. A little screen will pop up, and you can sign up right there. Tomorrow night, I'll be on the Ocelli Effect. I do that every Tuesday night from 6 to 7. And tomorrow night, I'm going to be talking about the economy that comes after this economy. I'll be an hour on microeconomies and the sharing economy and what it all means. And then on Fridays, I do Inside the Headlines at 2 p.m. Pacific on Crew FM, K-R-U-U-F-M, and I've been doing that for about 5 years as well. And the most fun I have is coming here every other week with you, John.
Well, it's the most fun I have too, Joe, and thank you so much. You have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the week. I will see you in 2 weeks. I want to thank Rosie Cutter again for being here, and I want to apologize for the many, many people who didn't get through to talk to Rosie because I didn't know quite how to operate the board here. But you all have a wonderful time. The best of luck to you, and I will see you and talk to you in 2 weeks along with Joe. Bye now.
You're my spark of nature's fire. Desire, a sunny, 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 sunny.